Tonight I'd like for us to give some thought to the subject of the chain of blame. I had a really neat PowerPoint illustration that I was going to use, but I'm just not comfortable with that screen back there where I can't see it without turning around to look during my sermon. And so, you know, we've got plans to put a large TV type screen on the back wall for the benefit of whoever is standing here on the floor. And I'm looking forward to getting that. It'll really make things easier for not only these kind of sermons that are in front of the pulpit, but also teaching classes and so forth, that we'll be able to see what's on the screen without having... I remember poor Brother Northern, he was a master at PowerPoint, but he spent most of his time turned sideways like this while he was teaching his classes. And that's a little bit uncomfortable. So I have foregone the use of PowerPoint tonight, but I want you to picture in your mind a big old, huge, heavy, rusty chain. Guys, have you ever gotten stuck and had your dress clothes on and you knew you had a chain in the back of the truck, but you dreaded getting that thing out because it's gonna get you nasty and dirty from one end to the other, and especially if you've got dress clothes on, and especially if you don't have a pair of gloves, you know, a chain just lays there in the back of the truck and gets rusty. That's all it's supposed to do until you need to pull something out with it. That's the image I've got in my mind, that old rusty, dirty chain that's strong enough to pull the world over, but it's really rough and rugged. Can you imagine dragging something like that around with you all the time? In the kind of work that I used to do, we used a chain quite a lot. And every now and then there'd be occasions when you'd have to carry a chain a long way, and the best way to do it is just to drape that thing over your shoulders and let what you couldn't carry drag and just do the best you could. How would you like it if you had to drag something like that around with you all the time? Now let me ask you this, have you ever been around somebody that everything that happens is somebody else's fault? They're always blaming you or somebody behind them or the other fella. They don't take responsibility for anything, it's always the other guy's fault. That's the chain of blame. And some people are dragging that thing around with them everywhere they go. A Christian ought not to be that way. First of all, we need to take responsibility for everything that we do for sure. But in addition to taking responsibility for our own faults, we also need a good dose of kindness and consideration that keeps us from putting the other guy down when maybe it is his fault. Maybe he has stepped out of line a little bit. Sometimes there are some folks who seem to just take pleasure in kicking that fella whenever he's down. From the story of Moses and the Israelites and Pharaoh in Egypt and all of that that we've been talking about in our adult classes for Vacation Bible School, I want us to go and get a lesson on the subject of the chain of blame. Before we go to the text, I want to set up three scenarios for you that we'll discuss. First of all is the scenario that we've all been in from time to time, some more than others, but I dare say that everybody has felt that sense of humiliation when you get blamed for something that you haven't done. When you're falsely accused, when there is no reasonableness about the situation, but you're made to look bad in spite of your very best efforts, and someone accuses you and blames you even though you haven't done anything at all. That's a tough situation to be in. But the fact is, life is real. And there are some folks out there who like nothing better than to pin that kind of blame and accusation on people, and especially on good people. It seems like sometimes they seek out a person who's really trying to do well and try to take him down in a false way. So that's scenario number one, when you're blamed or accused falsely for something that isn't your fault, something that you haven't done, something that you're innocent of. Now, scenario number two is quite a bit different from that. Scenario number two puts the shoe on the other foot. Scenario number two is that situation when you, for whatever reason, but often because of pressures or stress or difficulties that you're having, if you're not careful, you'll find yourself lashing out and blaming those who are the closest to you and who are trying harder than anybody to help you. Guys, you ever come home after a terrible day? And the dog, you know, hasn't learned to recognize those screeching tires when you pull up in the yard. And so he comes up wagging his tail. And what do? You take your foot, you shove him out of the way, you know. I'm just not in the mood for that. Just not in the mood to be nice. You let your emotions carry over toward those who have nothing whatsoever to do with what's wrong. Those who would be lining up to help you. When you snap at the kids, when it's not really the kids who've done anything wrong. That's scenario number two. Scenario number three is similar to that, except it takes it to the extreme level. Have you ever blamed God when things didn't go right? I hope, like everything, that every one of us here can say, no, I've never done that. But the reality is, a lot of us would have to say, well, you know, that's happened. And it does happen. Sometimes it happens for different reasons, but it's usually because we're letting things get to us that shouldn't really get to us, and we're not dealing with them in the right way. And so we want to blame somebody. And so the outlet that we decide to take takes this form. God, I just don't understand why you've let this happen to me. Lord, I've tried hard all my life and this is what you do? Things like that. That's scenario number three. God, why are you doing this to me? Now, let's open up our Bibles to Exodus chapter 5, and I think we see all three of these scenarios depicted here in this chapter. The chapter opens up by telling us of the first occasion that Moses and Aaron approached Pharaoh about that subject, let my people go. God says, let his people go. In fact, here's the way it reads at the first of the chapter. Moses and Aaron said to Pharaoh, thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, let my people go that they may celebrate a feast to me in the wilderness. And this is the occasion when Pharaoh made that famous statement, who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, and besides, I will not let Israel go. Now, you know, that's pretty arrogant, isn't it? That's really right up there at the top of the charts. If we wanted to illustrate somebody who had the totally wrong attitude toward God, old Pharaoh would be the one that we'd put there in that spot. I don't know who God is, and furthermore, I'm not about to pay any attention to him. I'm sure not going to let these people go. Moses and Aaron then in verse 3 incorporated that little word that we sometimes call into duty when the situation just needs a little bit of extra help. The God of Hebrews has met with us. Please, just let us go 3 days' journey into the wilderness that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God. Now, you may have noticed that this thing began as a let us go 3 days' journey into the wilderness. ultimately what happened was they left and went to the promised land, and that was God's design to get them back into the promised land. Why did they start out with this 3 days journey in the wilderness business? And you'll remember last night as we studied the plagues, some of that even came out in you know, Pharaoh says, okay, you can go, but you got to leave your animals here. Or you can go, but just let the men go and worship and do whatever and come back. That's not our subject to discuss tonight. We're not going to sort out the reasons why God had Moses and Aaron start out with this 3 days journey business, because we know that ultimately God was planning for Israel to go all the way to the promised land. But at this stage of the game, that's the argument that's being made. Please, Pharaoh, we're asking you, just let us go 3 days journey. And Pharaoh says, why are you trying to get the people out of their work? As a result of Pharaoh's little fit that he pitched here, he decided and decreed that no longer would the Egyptian forces supply the straw to the Israelites for the brick making that they were engaged in. He says, okay, that's it. You've got enough time on your hands to worry about this worshiping God business. You just get your own straw. But listen, here's the thing. The quota of bricks that you are to produce will not be reduced. So you've got to make the bricks, but you've also got to go out and gather the straw yourselves. And so the Israelites began to go all through Egypt gathering stubble for the straw to make the bricks, and they began to get behind in the production. And before long, the foreman over the Israelite men who'd been put in charge of the workers, they were brought out and they were beaten because the quota was not being met of the bricks, because they had to gather their own straw. And so Moses and Aaron and the workers of the people are in a mess here. And in verse 15 it says that the foreman of the sons of Israel came and cried out to Pharaoh, saying, why do you deal this way with your servants? There is no straw given to your servants, yet they keep saying to us, make bricks. Behold, your servants are being beaten, and it is the fault of your own people. But Pharaoh answered and said, you are lazy, very lazy. Therefore you say, let us go and sacrifice to the Lord. So go now and work, for you will be given no straw, yet you must deliver the quota of bricks. There's scenario number one. They've been accused of being lazy. That's why they're not able to meet this unreal quota. They've got to gather their own straw and make the bricks, and so they just can't produce as well. And so Pharaoh's answer to this whole deal is, it's because of your laziness that you're being punished, because you want to take time off to go out and worship God, and, you know, it's just your own fault. Falsely accused. They were not lazy. There's no other indication at all, even in this story, that there was anything wrong with the work and the work ethic of the Israelites as they produced these bricks. This is purely a false accusation on the part of Pharaoh. Go back to what we said at the beginning. Sometimes we're falsely accused. That's the reality of life itself. Remember what Paul wrote Timothy? Over there in 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 12. Yea, and all that will live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. It's important for us to remember that God never said we wouldn't be falsely accused. God never said we wouldn't be unjustly persecuted. In fact, God said you will be persecuted. Somebody says, well, now hold on. I don't know about all this persecution stuff. Did I sign on for that? Well, you know what? Paul did. Listen to what Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 10. He says, therefore I am well content with weaknesses, with insults, with distresses, with persecutions, with difficulties, for Christ's sake. For when I'm weak, then am I strong. As long as we're working for the sake of Christ, the persecutions will come, the accusations will be leveled against us, even falsely. Paul said, I can endure it because it's for the Lord. Now let's go a little bit further. You remember that scenario number two when I said sometimes the guy comes home and he's mad at the world, so he kicks the dog and slams the door and knocks the mirror off the wall and snaps at the kids and slaps his wife? I could have left that part off and it would have been just as effective, wouldn't it? The reality is sometimes we lose our objectivity and we blame those that are the closest to us. Look down there at verse 20. When they left Pharaoh's presence, they met Moses and Aaron as they were waiting for them. These are the foremen of the people. And they said to Moses and Aaron, may the Lord look upon you and judge you, for you have made us odious in Pharaoh's sight and in the sight of his servants, to put a sword in their hand to kill us. Moses and Aaron, this is your fault. It's all your doings. If it hadn't been for you, this wouldn't have happened. What does the word odious mean? Well, I don't have a textbook definition for you of that word, but by just reading the sentence, we can see what it means. It's not a favorable term. You have made us odious in the sight of Pharaoh and his servants. Very distasteful. Very disagreeable. You know, sometimes it seems that we reserve our sharpest criticism for those who are the closest to us. In fact, to the extent that Paul saw fit to warn the Galatian Christians about this very thing, over in the book of Galatians, as he dealt with a lot of different problems, Galatians chapter 5, verse 15, Paul says, but if you bite and devour one another, take care that you are not consumed by one another. He's saying this just after he has told them, through love, serve one another. The fact is, some folks don't want to be serving toward one another. And I think the warning that Paul gives here in Galatians 5:15 is to this end. You know, the worst thing in the world that could happen is for Christians to bite and devour one another. Because it'll not only cause a bad effect in the minds of those who look from the outside, but it'll also cause one another to become so discouraged that you may have a detrimental effect on someone's Christian living. You may even cause someone to be so frustrated, so discouraged, that they just give up on the idea of serving God. The fact is that if brethren can't get along, how could we get along with anybody else? But the fact is, sometimes we don't act like we really care for one another all that much. You know, we're all in this together. And I kind of wanted to see Moses and Aaron turn to those foremen and say, listen guys, we're just trying to get you free. That's what they were doing. They really needed to be reminded. We're all working toward the same end. And there certainly wasn't any call for them to accuse Moses and Aaron of being the cause of all their problems. Now let's look at scenario number three. Would you believe that somebody would really blame God? Would you believe that Moses would blame God? It's exactly what he did down there in verse 22. Then Moses turned to the Lord and he said, O Lord, why have you brought harm to this people? Why did you ever send me? Ever since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done harm to this people, and you have not delivered your people at all. Kind of makes you want to say, Moses, back off, man. You know what you're saying? He asked God two questions that he should never have raised. Number one, why have you brought this on your people? Number two, why did you ever get me involved in this? Boy, that sounds like sour grapes, doesn't it? And then two statements. Ever since this started, Pharaoh has done nothing but harm to us. And by implication, Moses says, and you've had ample opportunity and you haven't done anything to get us loose here. You know, this is not the first or not the last time that the people would complain against Moses. Nor is it the last time that Moses would turn against God. Turn over to Numbers chapter 11. Let's look quickly at this passage and then we'll be finished. In Numbers chapter 11, the Bible tells us that the people, the Israelites, were complaining because of what they thought was poor quality of the manna that God was providing for them in the wilderness. You know, they said, in Egypt, we had plenty to eat. We had cucumbers, melons, leeks, and onions, and garlics. But now, he says, our appetite is gone, and there's nothing at all to look at except this manna. Verse 6. And it got so bad that the people were weeping in their tents. And verse 9 or verse 10 says, Moses heard the people weeping throughout their families, each man at the doorway of his tent. And the anger of the Lord was kindled greatly. That seems to mean that God was just about out of patience with all the whining and the weeping and the carrying on. Moses doesn't see it that way, and it says here in the text that Moses was displeased. Who was he displeased with? Well, keep reading. Verse 11. So Moses said to the Lord, why have you been so hard on your servant? Why have I not found favor in your sight that you have laid the burden of all this people on me? Was it I who conceived all this people? Was it I who brought them forth that you should say to me, carry them in your bosom as a nurse carries a nursing infant to the land which you swore to their fathers? Where am I to get meat to give to all this people? For they weep before me, saying, give us meat that we may eat. I alone am not able to carry all this people because it's too burdensome for me. So if you're going to deal thus with me, please kill me at once. If I've found favor in your sight, and do not let me see my wretchedness. You kind of want to say, what? A couple of things. Number one, I'm sure that not a single one of us could ever begin to understand the kind of pressure that really was on Moses on that occasion. Number two, when we find ourselves in a situation like that, it's usually because we haven't gotten the right kind of folks to help us. And that's exactly what God prescribed for Moses. In the following verses, God says, call the elders to the tent of meeting. And he called all of the elders of the people, and they were designated responsibilities so that they could help Moses with this matter of seeing to the little mundane everyday things like food and where it comes from. One of the hardest lessons for many of us to learn, and myself included, in fact, I'm at the head of the line, one of the hardest lessons to learn is the lesson of letting someone help you. There are many times in our spiritual lives when we need to say, yes, I need some help. I need some encouragement. Yes, help and strength and encouragement comes from God. But it most often comes down the road through the avenue of God's people. Take advantage of the relationship that we all share here as members of the Lord's body at this place. That old blame chain, the chain of blame, is just... Blaine thinks I'm talking to him. I've got his full attention. That old chain is just too heavy to drag around. Don't put yourself in that position. Either blaming others unjustly, or those close to you in frustration, or especially in blaming God. If you're subject to our Lord's invitation in any way, we invite you to respond.